The speaker. Susan, are you on? You're not. I got a Susan. Well, somebody.
Well, you can't find me.
Good.
Hi, crunch time, so.
I don't have Jill on yet. I've got Beth connecting.
You're fine. Yeah, where would you do that?
I guess we're going to have the program first, as suggested, and then the meeting will go up to the for the meeting we'll have a regular meeting at the table. So
our speaker a bit dark here.
Yeah.
Good.
So far, this is the only one to get on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. I should have. Oh, oops, I should.
Oh, you are.
He is recording. Oh.
Because it asked me.
What are you trying to do?
Pause, stop.
People's experience that we know of. Okay, gotta get rid of this. Okay, so I always knew that I was adopted, as were my three younger siblings. You can see it began with me, then there were two of us, three of us, and then four of us. We had great adoptive parents, and we had very good lives. But that's not to say we didn't wonder where we came from. Although I really wanted to know who I looked like, because you don't look like anybody usually in your adoptive family. And I had forever wondered if I had a sister, because you see the three brothers in these pictures. I didn't do anything about finding out anything until 2016, when I learned this. It's kind of a long story about how I learned, but in 2016, I discovered that I'd been found on a doorstep. And that changed everything in my mind. All of a sudden, I wanted to know everything. And so I took a DNA test, because that was going to be my only way of learning who I was. So my curiosity exploded. I took the DNA test and we were matched up. And I say we, this is my daughter, Jenna, and we were like a detective team throughout all of this. We were matched up with a very kind and knowledgeable search angel who helped us. And it didn't take very long before we determined who my birth mother was. Okay, so my screen here. She had passed away, and it appeared that she had taken the secret of me to her grave. We discovered that she was 37 years old and the divorced mother of two teenage sons when I was born. To say that I was stunned and speechless is an understatement. So I connect with a half-brother, and while he's trying to wrap his head around all of this, I'm doing this. I'm putting pictures together of my new family. I assumed that I had a birth father who was probably similarly aged, probably had passed away also, maybe didn't even know that I had existed. So I wasn't sure I was going to look any further. But now this new half-brother is saying, we need to figure this out because I have no idea who your father might be. So we decided to keep looking and continued the search. And 5 months and 11 days after receiving my DNA results by email, we had determined who my birth father was then. While I'm trying to wrap my head around this new piece of the puzzle, he was 20. He was married. He had a baby and a toddler at home, and he was a college student. So this was a way bigger thing to even deal with than the 37-year-old mother. So I'm trying to wrap my head around it, and he does this. He makes this. He was very accepting, and he did not know, but he was very accepting of the situation, and he welcomed all of us into his family. I was very touched by the gesture because I learned quickly from people who knew him that, and from him too, that he was not an emotional person at all. So this was, didn't show emotion, that kind of thing. So this was a big deal. He proclaimed, you will be a secret to no one. And so as I continued to process this whole thing, I do this then, I make my own little thing because all of a sudden I'm seeing people that I look like. I never looked like anyone my entire life. And now I'm looking like people. And this was kind of like busy work while my brain was trying to process the whole situation. So I did this, and then I also did this. I had a high match that led us to him, and it was the Aunt Donna that's up there in the corner. And then I have a half-sister who also grew up with three brothers and always wanted a sister, and we were only 11 months apart in age. And the picture where it says sister and she's holding the rose, when I showed that to my daughter initially, she said, how did they get a picture of you? Because it looked so much like me. And I swear somewhere in my parents' 10,000 pictures, there was a picture of me with glasses like that because I had glasses like that and I had a hairstyle like that. I swear there's one that exists that's very, very similar to that. But anyhow, so all of a sudden I'm looking like everyone. Okay, so this is one example of what DNA testing can do. Obviously, an adoptee who has no information can do DNA testing and likely find at least one parent, if not both. Occasionally, we aren't that lucky, but most of the time, you can do it with some work. They don't just show up on the top of your list, but with some work, you can do it. So let's talk about DNA testing in general then. Okay, where do you test and which is the best? This is what people ask all of the time. These are the top four companies that offer DNA testing. And Thomas had a really good overview in an article in your last newsletter about DNA testing. The two that have the asterisks, Ancestry and 23andMe, you need to test with that company. The other two, you can take Ancestry or 23andMe results and upload them to the other two. So you don't need to test there. But the idea of being on more than one platform is that a lot of people just test one place. So if you move your DNA to as many as possible, you're going to find more matches. Now, which is best? People constantly ask this. And it's not a question of best. They all have good systems. They all will get you for sure DNA matches. They each have a little bit of a different algorithm for determining ethnicity, but it's not a one company's good and one company's bad. What you need to be asking is, where am I going to get the most bang for my buck? And that's going to almost undoubtedly, in every case, be Ancestry, simply because their database is so much bigger. They have, I don't know, 22 million at one point. I'm sure it's gone up from there. The thing is, it's not a renewable consumer. You test once. It's not like Pizza Hut where you go every month and get a pizza. You test once there. So they were exploding 3, 4, 5 years ago. Their numbers were just exploding continuously. Well, that has slowed down. But they have the largest database. You are most likely to find the most matches there. So we always tell people to start there, see what you get, and then you may want to move on. Okay. Another question people have is, how reliable is DNA testing? You know, that's a bunch of baloney. You hear people say, I don't believe that stuff. Okay. How reliable is it? We weren't very familiar with DNA testing, although Jenna had tested her DNA before I actually did mine to try to solve my mystery. Just because of her love of family history, she'd already built a huge family tree on Ancestry. And if she knew her dad's side, you know, thoroughly and knew where they all came from, but we didn't know anything about my ethnicity. So that was why she tested to learn her ethnicity. The more we got into this, we were kind of bowled over with the fact that we can answer this question with absolute certainty that it is very, very, very reliable. Now, what you will get are, you will get an ethnicity estimate. And we always say estimate because this is an algorithm that somebody has put together for how to determine where your ancestors from generations ago lived. This isn't where grandma lived or great grandma necessarily, maybe, but generations ago. And the more people who test, they fine tune the algorithm and it's an estimate. Now, will your estimate be a little different across the different companies? Yeah, it probably will be, but most people will say very close to their paper trail. When they follow a paper trail and have built a tree and have all these documents, it's very close to that. The other thing that you get are DNA matches. So it's a two-part here. The DNA matches are spot on, okay? People say, oh, you probably really can't, you know for certain. Well, you absolutely can. When I first tested in 2016, I had a fraction of the matches that I do now because it really exploded after that. But it kind of got to be, in my paternal side, kind of the thing to do. Oh, we have this new relative. Let's all test too. And it wasn't because they didn't believe it. They just wanted to get in on the fun. And so they're popping up like crazy. Okay. We go to an extended family reunion where there's a whole bunch of my birth father's first cousins. And then several of them have popped up and some of their kids. Every person tested at the exact level of the relationship we knew them to be, everyone. So I said we could be the poster family. We could literally make a poster of all the people who tested and they're exactly where they're supposed to be. According to the chart, we'll tell you if you share this amount of DNA, then you're going to be one of these relationships. It was always right there. So this is what you get. You see, there's a little breakdown of ethnicity over on the on my right.
Is that recent?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, let's go back to that. Okay, so they do update things from time to time because it's an estimate. It's their fine tuning. That's what science is. Science continues to fine tune itself in all areas. And so some people will get really irritated when it changes. And ours has changed from the beginning. Like hers was early 2016 when she tested. So, you know, that's quite a few years. It has changed. Part of what changes about it is that they used to lump things, a big group, a whole region would be lumped together. Well, the more people who test, they're separating that out. So that's going to change your percentages because now what used to be 40% of something might show up as 10, 15, and whatever, okay? Because they're separating it out. But when you click on your ethnicity, then you get more information. It will show you the map of where the ancestors came from. And if you look at the Ireland part, I've clicked on the 11% and it gives you more information under there. So this was never the big thing to me. I mean, it was cool, but the big thing to me were the matches and the people. That's what I wanted to know about. So what can you discover? People will say, well, you probably couldn't find a sister or a brother. Well, you absolutely can. Actually, not very often do you find a parent unless you know your parent has tested. Of course, I showed up as a parent on Jenna's, but maybe 3% of adoptees who test will find their parent has tested, and that'll be their top match. But you can definitely find a parent or a sibling, an uncle, a first cousin, all of these things. Okay, now look. First cousin twice removed, Tisha. I know who that is. She was a first cousin to my paternal grandfather. Okay, Nicole. Second cousin twice removed. Okay, she showed up on my DNA matches. And so once we solved the mystery, then if I would get a new match, I couldn't let it alone until I figured out who they were. You know, and most of the time I could. So I can go way down my list and I know who they are. And then I get to Virginia, half third cousin twice removed. And then we're laughing because who's ever even heard of that, right? But I followed. She had a tree. I had a tree. They're going to converge clear back here somewhere. Okay, so you find that and then you fill it in. And we've chatted and we both think it's funny. We're both authors. So we like to chat with each other. But yeah, there's such a thing as half third cousin twice removed. Okay, a fourth cousin or a sixth cousin. Yep, those will show up on your DNA. I know someone who's a genealogist and she blogs and she just is an incredible teacher. And she connected online with a seventh cousin through her DNA. And then they went to the huge Roots Tech conference and met each other. So wasn't that cool? She is so into it. She has DNA fabric and makes herself outfits because she'll present at Roots Tech. And so she'll have a new DNA themed outfit for every day she's there. But isn't that cool? A seventh cousin that she connected with. Okay. So those are the things that you can discover. So let's see what we have next. Okay. So we used it for my adoptee case. Okay. Even before we figured out who my birth father was, because that was the middle there where we were really thinking this is going to be a while. In fact, my top match on the paternal side initially was a third cousin. Whoa, right? Third cousin. Third cousins share great-great-grandparents, but you have eight sets of great-great-grandparents. And so our skills were very new at this time, and this seemed very daunting. And I wasn't sure how much further I wanted to go anyhow. Well, you know, my half-brother's like, we got to figure this out, who this guy was. And so we're like, you know, we're going to strap on our genealogy boots here and we're going to figure this out. Well, it probably would have taken us forever. You can let that person. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Got it. It would have taken us forever. We now know. But I forget where I was going. If a more recent match hadn't popped up, we would have never figured that out. So the case, we're in the middle between. So a few weeks before we find out who my birth father is, we actually solve another mystery. So we're barely into this. And Jenna's like, we are going to figure out grandma's mystery brother.
This is actually what started everything. This was what I wanted to figure out first, almost 15 years ago. This is why I got into ancestry in the first place, because of my grandma.
Okay. Her grandma, my mother-in-law, was raised in a children's home. Her mother had tuberculosis, put her in the home, said that she was to live there always. It was a good home, and she did have a good life. But she knew who her mother was, and she thought she knew who her father was. And she always wondered why her dad didn't keep her when her mother died. But she also grew up hearing that you may or may not have a brother, and he may or may not be named Ralph. So when you stop and think about that, it's just hilarious. So that's what Jenna was on the mission to find. So she began by building family trees and that type of thing. Well, once we realized the power of DNA, and this whole process is called genetic genealogy. You know, it's genealogy, but you're using genetics it's really in a combination, because we look for birth certificates and all of that too, but you're using the power of DNA. So we're going to figure this out. So we had 90-year-old grandma spit in a tube, and her results came back. And within 6 hours, we were 90% sure, certain that she did indeed have a brother, and his name indeed was Ralph. By 12 hours, we had confirmed that scenario. Here she is when she went to the children's home, and that's her and my father-in-law later. 12 hours, we had confirmed she had an older brother. His name was Ralph. He was given to a family at some point. She went to the children's home. There's some whys that we will never figure out there because so much time had passed. But that was really, really cool for us to figure that out. So, you know, many families have some kind of mystery. It may not involve adoption, but there's some kind of mystery. Somebody fell off the radar, or there's, you know, there's this story that may or may not be true, just like this, you know. DNA can help with those kind of things. Her brother was indeed named Ralph. He had passed. He had 11 children, though, and we have connected with three of them. And his oldest daughter here is pictured with my mother-in-law at her 91st birthday party. And Sandy drove from Illinois to meet her. They were not familiar with any of this kind of stuff, but they were, you know, listening and coming along. But she said, "I want to look her in the eye." And I'm like, "Oh, she'll come and she'll say we don't look alike and whatever." But she said she just felt like she fit in with all of us, and she completely believed it. They knew what they had been told was dad was adopted, but he never talks about it. And that was it. They knew nothing. So we had tons more information to share with them that they had never, ever known. So a mystery, a long ago mystery. Ralph was born in 1924, but we were able to conclude for certain that Ralph was her full brother. We went on to determine who she thought her father was not her father. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the term NPE, non-paternal event. The more people DNA test, the more people are experiencing NPEs. They're finding out their dad is not their dad. You know, you can occasionally find out mom's not your mom, even if it wasn't an adoption. Sometimes they're, you know, just weird scenarios, but it's becoming almost commonplace to find out dad's not your dad. And mom or grandma hid the information. Maybe they didn't know for certain who the father was, but they never dreamed anyone would ever be able to determine for sure. So people who are experiencing that, or who've always wondered if maybe DNA will help them. What do we have next? Okay, here's another example of a search. Okay, this is my husband's brother, Stan. And once he fully retired, he was really getting into genealogy. And so he's working on family trees. Well, he knew that Jenna already had his side really well documented. So he started working on his wife's family. And his wife's mother, Shirley, they knew a lot about her family tree. So they just filling in things, you know, right and left. Well, they started working on her dad's family, Floyd, and they didn't know as much about him. And then they got to Floyd's grandpa, and there were stories, but Floyd had always, as Floyd got older, he wondered if some of those stories were true or not, like that his grandpa died young and grandma remarried and had more kids, but you know, he had a different, his dad had a different last name and all of this kind of stuff. And he just wasn't sure. And the older he got, he wondered if maybe grandma had made up a story to cover up, you know, an indiscretion. Maybe she just had a child out of wedlock and then she concocted this story. Well, Stan, who is retired and is quarantined during the pandemic, just throws all of his time and energy into this. So he's following paper trails big time. And he would call me and say, what do you think we should do? And I said, you know, there's no reason not to DNA test. Floyd is still alive. Test him. You know, I don't know where it's going to go, but it might help. So he tested Floyd and it came back. And there was some curvy, windy roots in these family trees we were able to tell. But I said, let's do two things. We're going to look for the last name Canada throughout your matches and throughout your matches family trees. And then we're going to just pour over any family tree that has Canada in it. So he did that. He spent, I worked on it a little, but I'm like, oh, this is a long time ago. This Joby Canada was born in 1814, I believe. Okay, so we're talking a long, long time. And so I said, you know, he's got all this time. So he started working on it and he eventually found some matches to Floyd who had very extensive family trees. And he picked a clue off of this and a clue off of that. Now you always consider someone else's family tree to be clues. Okay. Because they may know a lot about building family trees or they may not. Okay. But they're still clues. And as long as you follow up on them and don't hang the mortgage on this clue, then you're going to be okay. Because if you determine it's not accurate, then, you know, you've lost some time. But other than that, so he found the name Canada on some family trees. He continued with his paper trail with some of these new clues he had, and he found that grandfather who did die at a young age. He was struck by lightning, plowing in the field. And that actually was the story Grandma had told. But, you know, when you don't have other things to back it up, over time, he just was wishy-washy about that. And they ended up finding someone at a library who was very, very helpful in the area where Joby would have been from. And they eventually came across the newspaper article on the front page of the paper, because that would have made front page news back then. And it probably was half the front page, because they're going to have every single detail of that day. And so I read last night, they have, Stan and his wife, Carrie, have recorded their experience in finding this. And it was pages of them just going through stuff. And then there's in bold print, Stan yells from the other room, I found Joby Canada. Another thing they experienced, though, was Joby was sometimes Joe. In the records, he was sometimes John. He was sometimes J-O-B-E, if you would pronounce that Joby as well. We aren't sure. And Canada had two N's, or it had a Y on the end. And sometimes it was Kennedy. And it's like, oh boy. Now you're really going to stop and think if you see the Kennedy. But that's one of the biggest clues he found. And once he took that family and followed him forward, their name was, spelling kept getting adjusted, but it was the same people, because the facts lined up, the birth dates, and then the story of the lightning. So he said, you know, he spent untold hours on this, but he said if he hadn't tested the DNA, it wouldn't have led him to the extra clues that actually helped him solve the mystery. So there's all sorts of ways that you can use DNA, from being curious about your ethnicity, solving an adoptee's mystery, or any other mystery that you might have in your family, or just broadening your family tree, because it's pretty cool to connect with a half third cousin twice removed. Okay. And you might end up with them on a tree, but to actually connect with them, it'd be hard to actually, you know, find a contact and get in a connection with them if it wasn't for the resources that you get from DNA. So we always tell people to start with Ancestry. A regular test costs $99, but they have sales all the time. And they'll be having a St. Patrick's Day sale soon. They have a Mother's Day sale, a Father's Day sale. Last year, I think they might have even had a summer sale, but they had a winter sale, a Black Friday sale, and a Christmas sale. So you can get a kit on at a sale price very easily. And a word about 23andMe, which I read Thomas's article and it was really good, but I will just add to it. 23andMe will also give you some health information. But if you are looking for a specific condition or gene or something like that, check to see if that's one of the things their results test for. Because they obviously, it's not an exhaustive list. They don't test for everything that there is. So if you want something very specific, check it first. But, you know, health information, any that you can get is handy to have. And doctors are getting used to people coming in now saying, I've done a DNA test and it shows me this. And that's just another resource then for them to add to your medical file and a little bit more information when they are maybe trying to make a diagnosis. But start with Ancestry and you can go far. You can learn a lot. You can have a lot of fun with it, or you can just do it for just to see what your ethnicity is. Lots and lots of people actually do that. Some people I've come across are like, we have matches? Where are those? I don't think they're hidden, you know, but they are interested in the ethnicity and that's what they see. So does anybody have any questions? No? Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me here to speak. And I'm going to mention you, Susan. Susan remembers me when I was that baby picture. My dad was in the National Guard with her husband, and the couples ran around a lot together. And she said, I think you said you remember coming over when my parents got me. So we go back a long way, and I think that's a cool thing. So, yeah.
So I've done Ancestry DNA testing, and now I get like an email notice that, you know, a third cousin has, I've been matched up.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a name, sometimes there's not.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions? Like,
yes,
we would do this and we put up our family tree. I guess there is an option when you want your name to be out there and to be able to. I know they can't. I hope they can track them down.
So you want a suggestion for how to find someone who didn't, or whether or not you do? Okay. If you are concerned about privacy, make up a name. Make up a name for your username. It could be anything. I know someone who put Tree 2018. Well, we've gotten pretty good at cracking usernames because most people aren't very creative. Now, Tree 2018, we wouldn't have been able to crack. And I actually had one that I never was able to crack, and it was a word. She just put a word. And so, you know, she was really not wanting to be found. So if you want a little bit, I just call it like some degrees of separation between you and them. Put a username instead of your full name. Okay. I don't know what. No, I don't have any of those on here. But if you put your full name, it's just going to say, you know, Jenna Langston, Colton Sturry, that's our son. Those just come up there like that. But you can put a username, and you can keep everything very private. You can have a family tree on there that's private that no one even can look at, or you can have one that you share that is public. It's the best thing is to do is to connect yourself and your DNA results to your tree. But if someone has a username, first of all, just take that username into Google and search it. You would not believe how often people use the same username on every account they have. And so you'll find them somewhere else, or they'll use a portion of their address or whatever. But if you want to remain somewhat private, use a username. If someone has used one and you need to figure out who they are, but you can message people. You can message people in Ancestry, although if there was one thing I would want them to correct or to improve, it would be their messaging system, because the message notice stays in the program. It doesn't go automatically to their email. You can opt in for those messages to be sent to your email, but even then, I think it might be a little iffy. So, you know, we're in the program every day. If we have a message, we're going to see it, but other people aren't. You might write a message and someone answers it a year later, but you always try. And even if they have the username, you know, you say something like, you know, we're DNA matches and I'd be interested in figuring out how we connect or something like that. You don't want to look like you're a stalker, even though this is information that they've put out there, but you know, people do get concerned.
I get.
Yes. My mom's information is on there, my adoptive mom. And I get notices for hers, but it's still kind of glitchy. I'll have been in and looked at it. And the next month it says you have a new match and it's that person. So I'm not quite sure about that. But does that answer mostly what you needed to know? Okay, well, thank you again for inviting. I did want to show, you have the magazine somewhere. I don't know if you've seen the Senior Living magazine, but I do write a column in there called The DNA Sleuth. And I write about some case that I've solved. And it's interesting to see how it all works. This last time, Alan Dougherty and I go to the same Writers Club meeting. And he was telling us all about his E.B. Williamson project, you know. And he said he had three adopted daughters and none of us have ever been able to figure out where those girls came from. Well, I'm like, challenge accepted. So I called Alan later. I said, what do you say? We're going to work on this. So we did. And we figured out where two of the girls came from. And there again, pieces of information. They were reported to be biological siblings, and they are. They are half siblings. The middle daughter and the younger daughter are half siblings. There were also some other little clues that came along with them over the years, a clue here, a clue there. And Alan and I were both kind of in the same camp. Oh, these probably aren't accurate. You know, they were exactly. And so I learned a lesson working on that one to never discount those clues, never assume that they're bogus or whatever, that someone made them up, or that over time, you know, like the game telephone, it changes, the messages change over time. Sometimes things get added to or deleted from even innocently. And then what you end up with in the end isn't very useful. I usually put clues way to the back burner. Well, I'm going to move them up a little closer now when I work on a case because of this one. They were spot on, those clues. So the further back you're looking, the harder it's going to be if you're looking for a parentage mystery, but you always try. And that one was good. Yeah.
I just want to verify what you're saying. I looked for 2 years with the information that I was able to cover to try to get parentage for the girl. And I had connections with, at that point, three ancestors of one of the girls, and they've been trying for a decade or more to locate this information, and nothing was happening. Beth connected with Tammy, which is a great-granddaughter of E.B. Williamson in South Carolina, and so she did another DNA test and gave Beth information. Then it was hilarious at our house. I go to bed early, get up real early. I'd go to bed at 6:30 and get up at 3 a.m. and do my research. Beth stayed up all night.
Sometimes.
So I'd get up and I'd have text, wow, the next morning, incredible. So every day she would find new stuff. And but it took the DNA connection to piece it together because I had the right name, I had the right location, but would you believe it? The news banner spelled the mother's name wrong. Didn't know that ever happened in the newspaper, but because when you're searching, most of the search engines expects incredible spelling, and so they don't look for variations of the letters. And but because of Beth's connection, then she was able to find an incredible stuff. And then I think it's in that story, the topper on it. You want to tell that part?
Yes. Okay. I'm actually talking to another descendant of Jane, and he just kept saying, but how did they come in contact with, you know, how did Ibi and Anna come in contact with these children, you know, these two half-sisters? And I'm a huge how and why person, but sometimes you just can't find those answers. But as we were chatting on the phone, I said, I'm going to look back at where she was, because the mother's name was Bertha, their birth mother. Bertha had a very tragic experience, one after another, that encouraged her to place her two daughters. But she had the one for a year, and she showed up in a census and with this one-year-old, and she was living at someone's house, and they were, she was the maid, housekeeper, hired hand. I can't remember, you know, it was weird how they said it. But anyhow, she was very young. They were elderly. She was living there. Okay, it said the guy was a farmer. Census records, you know, you guys already know, are fabulous. So they said he was a farmer. So my first thought was, let's look at him. But if he's a farmer, maybe he and EB had some connection, because, you know, being a botanist and a naturalist, okay, they were just near the Indianapolis area. So I'm looking at it for the farmer aspect. And then I took, the guy's name was Joseph Foltz. So I took E.B. Williamson plus Joseph Foltz and put it into Google. You know, what's it going to hurt? It brought something up where those two names were in the same thing. And this was just too easy, Alan. I still marvel at this. It wasn't the farmer connection at all, but what it brought up was this letters in the wall. Is that what it's called? Letters in the wall document.
That was a transcription I'd done for the Historical Society here. The people that now live in Williamson's home, just right across from the museum, found three big bundles of letters still sealed up. They'd been opened, but the letters were still inside envelopes of things mailed to EB. And when they opened one, realized what they had, and they were very fragile, they donated them to the museum. So the museum contacted me and warned them, would you be willing to take the time to go through these and transcribe what's there? Because I'm happy to be careful, because sometimes when you open them, it's correct to be. And so that's what I had done. And then put all that, digitized all that. And there was a big story in the newspaper about it, what had happened. And then I sent Mark a copy, in case he needed it for the story, a copy of the transcriptions I made, the whole thing. Well, he just posted it on their website. And so that's what she came across. My own writing, it was right in front of me all along.
But well, I
took the DNA connection.
I actually think I may have just done Stoltz. I'm not sure if I did Joseph or just Stoltz or Foltz, excuse me, Foltz. But anyhow, so reading through there and then doing some more research, what was the daughter's name? E something. I forget. Anyhow, Joseph Foltz's daughter married the banker here in Wells County. They lived here. They knew E.B. Williamson's parents. They were in the Foltz reading circle together. And somebody who knew someone, this woman who was living with Joseph Foltz and his wife as their housekeeper and having the one-year-old child, ended up deciding she couldn't keep that child. They knew somebody who wanted kids, and it has to be how that came to be. You know, it's not what you know, but who you know. A lot of things back then, you know, kids handed off for whatever reason. And they actually, theirs is very official for the time frame. Their adoptions were very official for not everything was like that. But another thing to mention is, you know, Alan had done lots of research, but because I have a subscription to Ancestry, I can get into more documents than you can just looking on free sites or actually driving around, you know, to libraries or courthouses. So if you have something big you're working on, or even you're doing intense work on your family tree, subscribe for a short time. Take advantage of the billions of archived documents they have. You put these people on your tree, you keep your tree, even if you let your paid subscription go, your tree is there. So we'll forever be world members of Ancestry because we use it every day. But, you know, if someone doesn't want that continual expense, you can do it just for a short term. But it took their archive documents and the DNA. Now, EB had three daughters, and the oldest one, even though we have clues, we can't crack it without also having some DNA to put the two together. You know, we have a name, we have a place, we have a date she was born, but without some DNA, because spelling, again, you never know. One of the biggest lessons I've learned in doing all of this is spelling didn't matter much back then. And I can even say that like 50s. It just, you know, now we, if our name's not spelled exactly right, it's bad. It's a big deal. Back then it didn't matter. Siblings will have obituaries, and they, in each of the siblings' obituary, their family members' names are spelled differently, you know. And it wasn't even that big, it wasn't even that long ago on some of the things that I found. So always keep in mind that something might be spelled a little bit differently. And so anyhow, that was a big case to work on. It was very challenging. It was a very fun week when that all came together. And then you're always looking for another one. We're always looking for another big one to work on. So, okay, I don't want to take up all your meeting time here, but thank you for being here and listening. And I have cards. I'm going to leave my cards here. My information is in the articles, but I also have cards. If you have questions or want some help with your DNA, we're always happy to do that.
That's right.
Yeah. Can I?
Yeah, because I'm just unplugged here. So you'll just plug yours in. There were three people other than us in the room on the Zoom, if you're interested in that. One person was in Arizona. Oh, who said their last name was Hedges? Bill Hedges. Bill, well, Susan, it said Susan, and then I said, hi, Susan, and she said, I'm here with Bill. So they were listening in. So, yeah, that's cool. That was on Zoom. Uh-huh.
And then,
Jenna, could you tell? Uh-huh. There were three on Zoom and one on Facebook.
And Kathleen from Ohio was one.
Kathleen, Susan, and Cheryl are on Zoom. What's her name?
Oh, yeah, if I can unmute. And if I can share my screen view. I forgot where to share. Oh, share. Okay. And that's.
If you want. You have to have it up. Then you hit share.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Okay, yeah, but I need to be. Oh.
Oh, no, it's here. That's right. Wow. Okay, this time.
Oops. Sorry, as again, the first Zoom okay. Hybrid meeting.
Let's unshare. Let's stop share.
Okay.
Do it again. Let's do it again. Because I don't know why it's not bringing the whole thing up. No, this. And that. Your list is what you want?
Yeah.
Share.
Okay.
Oh, okay, so I am on the screen.
There you go.
And let me get my volume up. So well, I appreciate Beth and Jenna, her daughter, and doing this for us. I had a lot of help with Jason helping with the Zoom, and Jenna, of course, doing all the Facebook Live for us. And so I pulled the I'm not talking. This was I've got the volume up all the way up on this, and I'm not hearing myself on. Okay, I guess I need the microphone. Have this society's order of business that's from the Constitution that we've just recently passed. I'll run through this fairly quickly, but this is what we'll follow for our business session. So I'll call the meeting to order. I have to report that I'm doing this because our president emerita is not here. Our president-elect is not here this morning. And so as an incoming vice president, I'll be filling in for the meeting. So we're called to order. And if Lynn has the minutes to report, I've got some extra newsletters back on the table with the magazine, if you need a copy. So, Lynn, do you want to read that? I'll give you this space.
Okay, minutes of the November 18th, 2023 meeting. The meeting was held of the Wells County Genealogy Society, opened at 10 o'clock a.m. at the Wells County Historical Museum, with President Connie Brubaker presiding. The president welcomed members and guests to the meeting. There was 12 members and two guests present. The minutes of the September 16, 2023 meeting were read and approved. Treasurer's report was given, and the treasurer pro tem, Cindy Hedges, did submit the Wells County Genealogy Society budget for 2024. Thank you. So new business, there was a discussion of the cemetery walk yard sign. Jerry Lehman suggested making the location of the program more prominent on the sign. And that suggestion will be addressed by the committee. The ongoing deeds project, 1.5 books to enter. Cindy Hedges has been diligently working on the project. There were several new ideas presented to the start of the reading of the process. So there's always help needed there. Hybrid meetings were discussed. It was pointed out that most of the membership lives outside the county, and conversations, discussion of topics, and voting at elections are available only to in-person attendees. And it causes a problem for anyone unable to attend the meeting in person. Cammy Mount made a motion with a second from Jerry Lehman that Thomas Leiby would act as administrator of a Zoom meeting scheduled for the January 20, 2024 Meeting. Motion carried. More information will be available in your January newsletter, as Thomas referred to. A motion by Joanne Gavilanis with second from Kathy Davis carried. The nominating committee was elected in July. An uneven year to select nominees for the office of president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. Names of nominees will then be presented at the September meeting, with the election being held at the November meeting. A discussion of voting followed. Should the Wells County Genealogy Society consider including members not in attendance be allowed to vote in elections and in business matters? The homepage was briefly discussed. The question is, should we officially request the Wells County webpage on the InGen web to be transferred to the Wells County Genealogy Society so that we can host our own new current homepage? Discussion tabled for more information. Online newsletters was briefly discussed. There were some old Wells County Genealogy newsletters posted on the old website. Should a more complete set of the old newsletters be uploaded to a new site? Should the name index to the first 27 volumes be included with the site and encourage links to it? Discussion again was tabled for more information. Facebook discussion of whether it would be feasible to have a group page on Facebook to facilitate discussions and promotion of the society. Discussion again tabled. Discussion of the adoption of the 2023 Constitution and bylaws and revisions was discussed. The current revisions were adopted. Thank you to Lynn Elliott, committee chairperson, Thomas Leiby, Connie Brubaker, Susan Price, and Larry McAfee for their work on this committee. A lengthy discussion was held about possible changes to the just adopted bylaws. A new constitution and bylaws committee was appointed. The following members have volunteered to serve on this committee: Thomas Leiby, chairman, Lynn Elliott, Jerry Lehman, Larry McAfee, and Cammie Mount. Anyone else who would like to serve on this committee or have suggestions for revision should contact the Wells County Genealogy Society. A motion to move the vice president to the office of president at the end of the term was defeated. The election of officers was held. Elected was President Larry McAfee, Vice President Thomas Leiby, Secretary Lynn Elliott, Treasurer Diane Johnson. Thank you to everyone for agreeing to serve in the leadership of our society. Our next meeting will be Saturday, January 20th, 2024 at 10 a.m. at the Wells County Historical Museum. The 2024-2026 elected officers will be installed. You may choose to attend this meeting in person as usual, or you can choose to attend the Zoom meeting for those who wish to attend online. The March 16th, 2024 meeting will be the annual carry-in. Thanks to Cammie Mount on preparing the meat for the dinner, and side dishes will be discussed in January. Submitted, Lynn Elliott, Secretary.
Thank you, Lynn, for those very thorough minutes. Is there any discussion before we vote to approve? Okay, is there a second? All in favor say aye. But Cindy moved and Joanne seconded. Okay, we'll now have a treasurer's report, since we now have the current outgoing treasurer as well as the incoming treasurer here.
The Balance as of November 18th, 2023 was $4,961.16. Deposits were made, all were dues paid of $240 for 10 members. One is a new member. She didn't know the dues were 25. She sent a check for 15. So I've emailed her and she's replied and she's sending a $10 balance due. So the total deposits were $240. Expenses were for the January newsletter, $66. So the balance is, as of January 20th is $5,135.16.
Are there any questions for Cindy in regards to the treasurer's report? Discussions or comments? Do you have a motion to accept the treasurer's report? There a second? Okay. And all in favor say aye. And it's approved. I don't know if we have any reports from committees. We have Cemetery Walk, a Constitution Convention Committee, several others, but if there's nothing additional to note.
Yeah, I think somebody replied that they were considering the old block that cemetery.
No. No, it'd be Old Murray. Yeah.
And so that brought up a question like, when will that be decided? This group decides or the committee brings it?
We probably could wait. Okay. Probably officially wait till the next meeting in March. Connie Brubaker is going to be in charge of the cemetery walk after all of them since 2015 at Fairview has been chaired and led by Lynn Elliott. So I guess we can unofficially announce it'll be Old Murray Cemetery and possibly having the location in the churchyard at Murray with the missionary church where we did have it when we did the Rockford cemeteries. The committee, I guess I proposed it. Susan's on it. Lynn, I guess the group proposed others. I guess for the following year, I would think I've got one in mind already, is the Stahl Cemetery. But if anyone has particular ones that they would like to propose to the committee, I think we're all open to that. Yes, the confusion is that the cemetery walk is under the genealogy society. I'm always where it seems like the poor stepchild of the historical society sometimes because there's such an overlap in the officers and the members. But a lot of times what one society does, the other society gets credit for it by default. So if no other committees like to report, and I don't know if we have. Yeah, that seems to be floundering, except for Cindy. Currently, it's only Cindy working on it and Susan. And but that always, I think all the previous meetings we've had, We've asked people to volunteer to do the proofreading. And that's a major step of going through to see what's already been abstracted from the deed books. And I think that can be done by those, well, I'm not sure, that aren't local. I'm not sure.
And whether somebody's borrowed one or if they have access to library, then it's fun to have help.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might help. I think others might. I don't know exactly how or what you're doing, but maybe there's names that have sent a training session or walkthrough.
I would be glad.
Where people lose life, you work on a certain
just a report. You did ask the library about printing off the library. And it's going to be pretty costly. And Jason was more willing to actually give manpower to do proofreading than spend time having somebody go through the whole microfilm print each page so that somebody off site. But they have limited hours, so depending on how quickly we want to get this proofreading done, just need to build more bandwidth. But I'd be glad to show anybody how to do what I do, as far as entering the data, in three books that we still are working on, S and X and Y. For all the rest of them are done and ready for proofreading. We have O, P, Q, R, S, S, T, B and W, there's no view. So we've got about six or seven that can be started. Three books we're going to pass and look at creation and next, and you start to do why.
Yes.
Actually, the books. All different names are in each book. They're actually by year. And I don't know if any of us have volumes, they were better. But there are names, all different alphabets are in book A and book B. And in the front of the book, then they have a page for each whatever. So they're not
books
are just random.
Yeah. Okay.
They're not hearing any of that, so they got.
Okay, well, that's probably falls under our unfinished business anyway for the last dozen years or so. Is there any other unfinished business or any new business?
I have two people who have agreed to serve on the bylaw revision committee. And that is Roger Shearer and Connie Irving. So we'll need to add those two names to that. I would ask for half payment of our Chamber of Commerce membership, which is $145, and half of it would be $72.50. And I would like to ask the genealogy side.
Is there a motion to have that expense of contributing to the Historical Society's membership in the chamber? Okay, we got a Moved by Cindy and second by Roger. So any discussion on this? I think what, the last few years we've done that.
Services that we receive for the Historical Society are for the genealogy. They do print our posters for the Harry Law, and that kind of thing. That is a benefit of the membership.
And the chamber does have a, if our genealogy societies can ask to be added to that mailing list, it gives it a lot of information of what's going on. And, is there any support then for contributing that expense to the Historical Society for their membership? Do you, are you ready for a vote? So all in favor of spending this money for the Historical Society's membership in the Chamber of Commerce's, is that stated correctly? As a motion? All in favor, raise their hand. All opposed, no. Looks like unanimous. Is there any other new business or announcements? My understanding, Lynn's looking in the minutes. My understanding is that it was approved, just I didn't keep my, or didn't receive a copy from November or didn't have one. Yeah, that pertains to the budget too. If there's a line item to spend for the budget, you'll notice that it costs $66. It's 60 cents. Oh yeah, it's 60 cents for printing the newsletter upstairs, and then it's 66 cents now for the postage to mail it. Oh, tomorrow. Okay, I wasn't sure. That's what Cindy said it was.
Cindy, I just heard that you presented the final financial accounting, and so I don't think that was approved, so it may be a secondary name.
Okay.
Do you want to do that today, bring on until March?
Let's, I would propose, if I can make an executive decision, to have it discussed and voted on in March. But to someone send a notice and a copy to the members, and we just email and let some ready for any discussion that might happen, questions. Because I had one, whoever does the newsletter, I would propose that they have a certain amount that they're allotted to print and mail the newsletter, and they can do however they want with that. If they want to print a 24 pager and cover the excess expense themselves, or if they want to put out whatever is budgeted. But
I'm just concerned we're not going to have newsletters because we don't have them to step up.
Yeah. And Kathleen, if you'd want to unmute and add to the discussion. I don't know if I could, we can hear you.
I would be fine with just receiving a copy.
Kathleen's one of the members that was here, attended last year, but she lives in Ohio. And we have a large percentage of our membership lives out of state or not in Wells County.
Can you hear me okay? Hello? Thomas? I don't know if you can hear me all right or not. I would be fine with just receiving an e-copy.
Can you increase your volume? I can hear.
I don't know if I can. I don't know where my microphone is. I would be fine with receiving an email copy only.
I can hear.
I'm going to put it in
the box that she's. Yeah, and speaking, but I'm sorry, Kathleen.
That's okay. I'm going to put it in the chat.
March, if we continue a hybrid meetings, we'll get some of these bugs worked out. So is there any other discussion that we can have today? If not,
okay.
Oh, good.
Email copy.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. And that's the question that we can continue to discuss also of having a two-tiered system, because we have several that have opted to receive the newsletter as a PDF, as an email attachment, which doesn't cost us anything. No printing costs, no postage costs. So, and then considering it's a, what is it, $1.26 or whatever to print and mail one copy. Even with that, what does our membership receive for their $25 dues? So these are things we can discuss future meetings. Any other business announcements? Are we ready for adjournment at 11:25? We are adjourned. Oh, here, okay, here's my screen.